Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant.
Hey.
And this is Now We're Talking. Well, guess what? I have a man in the studio with me.
How's it going?
And not just any man, but this specific man. Last year, I had a number of guests on the show, but I didn't necessarily have occasion to invite somebody back. But it's a new year, and I thought, I got to get Jay Hindle back in here.
I feel honored.
Because last time you were here, we actually had like an hour and a half
show. It was amazing. Yeah.
And we just hung out. We had a good time. And I thought, you know, this time of year really takes a toll on me, man.
Yeah.
The winter and the darkness. And it's a really difficult time. And I thought, if I'm going to come in and do this show when it's dark, I need somebody who can bring the light. So no pressure.
All right. So bring the light.
You must bring the light.
All right. It is pretty dreary.
But you already have, actually. It's dreary, but there's actually still a little bit of light out there, which is new.
That's my doing.
So I think what's happening right now as I look out the window and I see a little bit of light kind of parallels you coming into the studio. It's all about things are moving in the right direction.
I feel like it's like the light is coming out from the cracks, right? You kind of like have the armor of winter and then...
Yeah, the cracks are showing.
The cracks are showing, the light's flaring out once in a while, unpredictably. Yeah. So this is one of those nights.
It's funny they were talking about cracks because last time I remember you talking about how you liked to full acid. That was one of the highlights for me of that episode.
About that.
And
yes.
Here we are talking about cracks already.
Yeah. Straight to
but
it.
But the cracks are... I mean, it's interesting because it snowed today and it's actually quite cold out. Colder than it's been in a while. It's actually a lot more wintry than it's been in a while, but it was a light... day.
Yeah, it's holding below zero, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's rare, which is a beautiful thing about living in Vancouver.
Anyway, Weather Talk by Jay
Hindle. Weather Talk by Jay and Jeff. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the weather. You don't need to just live your life and, you know, conduct your own commentary about the weather with your friend or alone. You can listen to the college radio station at UBC, and we will break it down in metaphors. We are the metaphorical college weathermen. Not metaphorical in the sense that we literally aren't weathermen, but metaphorical in the sense that we use figurative descriptions of how emotionally the weather makes us feel.
And we go deep.
We go deep. So thank you very much for tuning in. Please now change the station. And good night.
Hey, remember last time we met that listener and
few listeners? So should we take calls tonight?
I mean, it's your show.
What? Don't tell me that. I can't handle that kind of pressure.
You just started shaking.
Now you're going to make me try to read that far to see what the number is. I always have to hold on, so I got to move the microphone. And I'm back. It's 6:04 UBC CITR. We're going to be here until just short of 7 o'clock when Gareth comes in and does his show More Than Human.
Ooh.
Okay. But between now and then, Jay and I are just hanging out on the radio. You're listening. Give us a call, 604-UBC-CITR, 604-822-2487. The number's listed there on the board, and I find that this is a good way for me to measure the degradation of my eyesight.
I
was never able to read it well, but I feel like with each passing month, I'm really questioning whether that's what I'm seeing. But 604 UBC CITR, let's just stick with that.
Okay.
Because I feel like in this day and age, I mean, isn't that going to be like the catch-all for anybody that wants to just quickly hear that number? They're going to be able to figure that out is what I'm saying. They don't need to know the numbers. You figure out the numbers. That can kind of be their little test.
It's an IQ test. Can you earn your spot on the air with us by figuring out?
Yeah.
The numbers to letters ratio.
It's easier for me to read, and now that I think about it, I don't even need to read it. I can just remember that. I've never been able to remember the number. I can remember that, UBC CITR, and so can you if you're just listening and you need to pull the car over and responsibly call us. It's the penalty for distracted driving is, I think it's like $600
now. It's not worth it.
Definitely not for this show.
No.
So you're not going to win a prize that's going to offset the loss of paying that ticket. So what do we want to talk about? You and I have both been living our lives this winter, but we're not going to talk about that because that's for us to talk about off the air. We want to intrigue people. We want them to listen to our demeanor and say, hey, these guys sound like a couple of happy-go-lucky guys. I bet their life is you know, interesting and fun. And
tickety-boo.
Tickety-boo. But maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We're going to keep that secret. So let's establish that from the outset.
Yeah. Nothing we say.
Yeah. Will be
the
confessional
full truth.
Yeah. It's going to be a distortion of the truth.
But you were speaking of mental acuity, like remembering that number.
Right.
Right. And that just made me think, like, as an actor, that is crucial. Like, I know 604 CITR, right?
Yeah.
If I did that in an audition, I would never get the part. But I have to remember it's UBC CITR, right?
Right.
So, like, some people go to the gym and work out. I have to work my brain out. I have to work out those little gray matters.
In terms of memorization?
In terms of memorization and speed of it, because the film and TV world, you get...
So you exercise that muscle, you're saying, through the auditioning process, yep, or actually independent of
or
that?
Or through the world. Like, I give myself tests and I...
This is like Kegels for the brain.
It is, yeah, right? Squish, squish, squish.
Wow, a lot, yep, of squishing, yep, squishy matter.
And it's different kinds of tests.
What are some, like, of the exercises that,
well,
you do?
When I'm driving, for instance, on a long road trip, I start to memorize road signs and mileage markers. And I also quiz myself on what did that sign just say. I can never find out if it's the truth or not because I passed
it.
Right.
But you can sense whether you've got it or you almost have it,
yep,
or whatever.
Yep. What else? I read a lot to my kids. I read books over and over and over. I have two children. And I start to memorize pages.
Really?
Yep. And so I see how much I can read, and they know it word for word too. So when I go off book, they know, even just a word. So they hold me accountable. So I start to just like, what am I reading now? Dora the Explorer, mm-hmm, and Clifford the Big Red Dog. And I'm off book for all of those. And it's a constant practice. Like,
and does the skill, the ability to do that, mm-hmm, does it grow, or is it about maintenance? Just maintaining a certain level of acuity? Or can you continue to
outwardly
expand it?
Oh, it grows.
Really?
My mental bicep is pretty strong.
Does this make you a quick study?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I think through school, I've always been fairly quick,
yeah,
but I've become quicker and quicker and quicker, finding little shortcuts and imagery. Through imagery, I do that as well. Images that
associating
I link together
it with...
to make a story, to associate, okay, to what I need to memorize. Or,
wow.
Or what I call learn. I hate using the word memorize.
Right, right.
Because there's that pressure to just do it, and then it comes out as rote. As
opposed, right,
to,
memorization almost implies recitation.
Yep. Yep.
Like, that's kind of the experience of going to school, in a way.
Yeah, left brain versus right brain kind of learning. Yeah.
Yeah, just memorize this and then spit it out. But we're talking about actually expressing the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So would you say colors? Did I just make that up?
Colors? You made colors. But I do, because
that's my memory is me trying to remember what you said. And whatever you said, in my mind, I wanted it to be colors.
Yeah, I do sometimes. Like, but it's more images. Visceral images.
Can you give me an example? Like, if we actually took some text right now, could you actually apply this?
Sure.
So, okay, text. How we could find it on the computer, but what about on that clipboard? Or do we need it to be like a passage? Can it just be literally just any text?
Yeah, like,
what do you need?
It's usually like a couple lines of text, right? A
couple lines of text. Is that for... Maybe if you grab one of these CDs.
All right.
So Jay, right now, if you're just tuning in, Jay is going to grab a CD from the library here at CITR. He's going to determine whether he can find lines of text in the liner notes. And see, of course, a lot of these digipacks these days, if
it's
you reach inside...
Headroom.
Oh, headroom. Is there a little... Negatory. That's okay. We're 0 for 1. But you know what? There's 1,000 CDs here.
I also have a ton of auditions on my phone
here we go.
I have to get as well. Right?
Perfect.
So, for instance, let me pull something up and just hit... So I had to memorize a reporter for an audition. I can't say which audition it is.
What?
And I had to say... Here's my lines.
Okay.
Earlier today, you surprised traders in what some are calling an abrupt about face by announcing a major shift back to African diamonds.
Okay.
Full stop, right? So I get that, and then I got to put it in my brain, and then less than, let's say, 10 hours later, go in front of a casting director or a director, whoever, and spit it out
with confidence. Authority.
Yeah, because I'm an interviewer, right?
So the last thing you want to be doing is trying to remember it. Mm-hmm. You want to be saying it as if you're choosing the words.
Yeah, as though I'm like you and driving the bus of this interview, right?
Yeah.
By the way, everything
I'm saying is scripted. I know that it sounds improvisational, but I actually spent meticulously the night before I do the show.
Yeah.
Every dot, 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 it's all plotted out, and you know that.
This guy's a genius.
Thank you.
So I would start this. What's the time of day? Earlier today it starts, right?
Mm.
And I didn't have to look at my script there. Earlier today. So I think of a specific time. So when I say earlier today, was it 10 o'clock? And sometimes, what was I doing at that time period? My character, right? So I think earlier today, it was breakfast. I was cooking eggs and a couple of pieces of toast. So when I come to that part, I'm like, earlier today. Oh, yeah. I can almost taste the eggs on top of the toast. They're poached. You know, maybe that's a little much. So the next one is, you surprise traders. So who's you? So now I got to figure out who the subject is, right? And he's this high-end business manager guy.
So it's not me. It's a guy named you.
No, it's a guy named you.
Because I was wondering that before.
Yeah, I can't use the name because this is fresh.
Yeah.
This is fresh.
This is hot.
Let's call him Nick.
Nick.
So this Nick, he's a business owner. And so I'd have to think, okay, well, what business is? Is he high end? Is he middle end? Low end? He's high end. He's the highest of high.
You get specific.
Yes. Yeah, so I get specific. Think about him. Surprising trader. So now I get into images like, oh, he popped out of a cake.
Right.
Or right. You know, he how
surprise.
Did he? However that, so now I know it's earlier today. I'm eating my eggs. You, which is Nick, surprised, jumped out of a cake and surprised some traders. So that's right. Like the first half of the line, right?
Right.
And then I think of, in my mind, okay, now the next, do we want to keep going on this?
Yeah, I do,
okay.
Of course.
In what some are calling an abrupt about face. So now I think, okay, what does an abrupt about face look like?
Right.
Because that's a term that I never
use. And isolating that as a thing, yeah. Abrupt about face.
Yeah.
Do you ever use mnemonics or anything that like,
oh,
A-A-F?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, all the time. Like okay. if it's a name, like I have to, for instance, the Gettysburg Address or whatever, I would be like the Gettysburg Address. I'd be like GBA, Gettysburg
right.
Address. So like
right,
the,
right, right.
The major.
That's what I do with lyrics.
Yes.
A lot of
oh,
that.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that. So usually it's proper names. Like if it's Nick Franklin, I'd be like NF. Or if it's a list of words, I remember the first letters of each word.
So you can just grab at that.
Just grab
you've
it.
Locked
that.
In that it's that acronym. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a word that starts with the same letter, but it's different. And,
and
it's quite hilarious. So,
wow.
And so I link them together about face for right now. I just thought of like one of those British Parliament guards with the big black hats on, you know how they turn, they go whoop, and they do about faces. So
right.
That's what he
visualized the face.
So I visualize that, and I won't forget the term an abrupt about face. So when it comes to that, I see those things. Maybe it's not right for the scene, but I won't forget that term or that specific three word passage. So earlier today, you surprised traders in what some are calling an abrupt about face, and then the next part of the sentence is by announcing a major shift. So like, what does that look? By announcing a major shift, how was it announced? Was it on television that I saw this news? Did it come through as a press clipping? So I get specific, a major shift. What does that look like
earthquake.
To me? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Tectonic plates or something. Major shift. Back to African diamonds. And that's pretty easy. I just think of Leonardo DiCaprio and Blood Diamond or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And you're experiencing illegally trading in Blood Diamond. That's where you can drop on something for your own life, right?
Yeah.
Because I know that about you. I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Untruth. And then I repeat it like 10 times, right? And then I go through it.
Saying that line
with different images.
You know,
maybe the images don't work. And so I'd be like, okay, well, what's going on here? Hmm. And then I get in the specifics. Is it in or is it an or on? And,
right. All those little details.
Yeah. But not forgetting the story. And basically, I'm doing my job as a reporter. I need to garner and glean information from this guy. So then I layer that on top after. Yeah.
And does it take patience to do that? Or it's so rewarding as you're going that it kind of flows nicely?
I guess that's I hate that process of memorization.
You
learning. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's kind
and
of
you
like,
say hate with such. It's interesting to hear you talk about this effective strategy you have and how it's, you know, as you say, you constantly put in the effort to exercise the muscle, not just, okay, I've got to do this thing right now. I'll suck it up.
Yeah.
You hate it, but you just kind of accept that the way to deal with something you hate is just push through it.
Well, and also find a way that works best for me, for my brain.
Yeah.
I say hate because for me, that's not what acting is. This is the audition process, right? This is me kind of, yes, this is the machine I'm in. This is the speed I have to operate at. How can I maximize it with my brain? But I don't, then if I book it, I get on set and then the real work starts, right? You're working with an actor, not just a reader. You're not in this foreign room. You're actually in the environment, hopefully. You're not on a green screen. And there's way less, I just find there's way less drain and there's more of a, more things that are impetuses and stimulus
which
coming
makes
in,
it easier
which makes it easier
because
now
the lines start to have more meaning.
They have more meaning
because you're living inside of the
you're talking to
context.
You're talking to real not that I'm not talking to a real person but a reader who's actually looking at you and
well, sometimes when you're acting because I don't know because I haven't really had the experience you're not necessarily acting with an actor though right you might be
sometimes
you might be just talking to a like to be a stand-in or whatever just talking
or an X on the
next
wall
to the camera or something
Yep.
Is that harder when you don't have the eyes?
It is.
Human eyes?
Yeah, it is. A lot of time, it requires a lot of imagination and imagery, which I just spoke about. Or, you know, who are you? How tall are they? Where are they? Are they responding well to? Are they responding poorly? Are they a friend? Are they an enemy? Like, all those things come in. Generally, though, the actor, no matter how big they are, will stay.
Mm.
They might not be in your eye line because of where the cameras are placed or whatever. There's no space for them, but they're generally there
to give you
until
something
you get
energetically
to either ego or upper echelon actors,
right.
Which are not one and the same.
So, for example, if like a big name actor is in a scene with somebody who has two lines in a movie, they might not choose to stick around for that.
It also depends. They might have a really early call the next day, or they might have to go to B unit, and so they're pulled away from you. And even though they're like, no, I want to stay and help, they have to go. So
yeah,
it depends. It depends on their character and their ability.
Kevin Spacey, every Kevin time. Spacey. That guy.
I don't, I don't Kevin know Smith, who's amazing in town here.
The director?
Yeah, the director. Yeah, and Clerks, and he was in. He's an actor as well.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's in town, and he's a tremendous man.
Did you work with him?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So what? Why did he give you that? Why do you have that impression of
his ability to communicate with actors, and not just that, but the team and lead and the gifts he brought in, and just the joy. Like my world right now is about increasing my joy tolerance. Like, how much joy can I possibly tolerate? And I see this guy at the top of his game, still acting, not acting, still just conducting himself with such grace under pressure, but also such humanity. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want. That's,
wow.
You know?
And not every director is an actor's director, right?
No. Some are really technical, right? Some know the camera so well. Some come from the director of photography side.
Yeah.
Know their lighting and everything. And then they kind of an afterthought is the actor. And then others are really lean on their DOPs, director of photographies, and are all about the relationship with the actors. And they can usually evince a better performance out of their cast that way.
Yeah. So. And then you have actors like Woody Allen or somebody like that, who's an iconic director who famously doesn't really get that involved
He's
the
very
actor's
much
process.
Hands off. He casts them and that's his job. He finds, which is a huge part of a director's success. Yeah.
Do you find it intimidating to go on set and to know that, because time is money, right? It's like there's a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
And as an actor, I'm imagining, having not had the experience, you go into the scene. We were talking before about memorizing your lines. It's like the amount of patience there would be for you to not remember your lines or to continue to make a mistake and not be able to fix it.
Yeah.
It's not just that you might disappoint some people. Like, there's a lot of money involved. So there's a lot of pressure to get it right quickly, is there not?
Oh, it's huge.
And what's that like to
cope
with?
Well, that's the thing is, it requires almost a laser focus, I say. But yet, within that, you need to have that zen of I just like it's. I liken it to meditation, where there's voices saying, hurry up, get this right. But in it, you need to be calm. You need to be relaxed, centered, focused on just this person in front of you, not the fact that the producers are like giving out money and paying. And it's not as bad now as it used to be when they used real film, right?
Right, no kidding.
The celluloid, the processing of how much per square foot it was for film. Now it's digital, so it's a little less expensive. And to do another take, you don't have to check the
just
gate.
Press the button again.
You press the button again, and data can be stored easily. And so it does take some of the pressure off. But there is, Jeff, when you have like tomorrow, I'm going into a scene where I'm talking, and then there's probably 50 or 60 stunt people. And there's a huge stunt sequence that happens right after one of my lines. So if I mess that line up.
You cue it basically with your line?
I cue it, yeah. And the whole thing could go gray. Yeah. And they say cut, and they have to reset pyrotechnics, all that
stuff. Are you still on camera when the stunts are occurring?
I'm not sure how they're going to shoot it. I imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine that, or at least a foreground shot of me with all this stuff happening in the background. And,
yeah. So if you started wheezing or doing something that was otherwise.
Or get a little, or just being human, like getting a cough or a tickle or a sneeze or something, one of those takes. It's terrifying. And I have little things like if I push my tongue up against the roof of my mouth, because this is from theater. Everyone try it at home. Yeah. And then if you put your forefinger and your middle finger below and above the tip of your nose and put a little pressure on it, that's something that helps to get rid of a sneeze. But if you're on stage and you push your tongue up against the roof of your mouth, it stops you from sneezing.
Really?
Yeah. It's a little trick. Like,
so on camera, you'd have to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah.
That wasn't, because it picks up everything.
Bit easier on camera because it is cut. Okay, this guy's obviously needing
or just convince everybody that was a choice that relates to your character. I can't remember who was describing this, but I was watching something recently. I can't remember what it was, where it came from, but somebody was talking about Spencer Tracy and how I think it was the movie with Sidney Poitier, is it Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? What is it called?
Oh,
whatever that movie is.
Yeah.
So he's like in his advanced years. He's probably shortly before he died, Spencer Tracy, like maybe in the 50s or early 60s. And anyway, there's a moment where I think the actor who was describing this story, I really wish I remembered who it was talking about your mark.
Yeah.
And explaining how you don't really want to reveal to the audience that you're looking for your mark or searching for it. And there's just a scene in that movie where he's kind of like walking around, looking at the ground, and he's quite obviously like identifying where his mark is, getting towards it, and he can't see too well. Just like that's what he's doing. But he's finding a way
to sell it, right?
To sell it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. I'm like, wow, that's pretty masterful, like for him to have a limitation where he's struggling to see where his mark is. But to just kind of make the decision, well, that's what I need to do right now. So I'm going to make this like, make sense.
It bleeds into character work almost or something. Yeah. I know there's ways that...
You should do that tomorrow as an homage to Spencer Tracy.
Just wander around looking at my feet.
Yeah.
Looking for my mark.
Yeah.
That's
a true actor can sell anything, I believe.
I'll blow one take doing that.
If it doesn't go well, you can have them call me and I'll talk to them about it.
Here's Jeff's cell number.
Yeah. Just, or give them the link for the podcast and it'll all make sense.
That's true. Oh, yes.
Production can stop. Everybody can listen and they'll go, oh, okay, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
And because it's digital, it's time to do that now.
Yeah.
Did you ever act on a set where it was film? Or by the time you started acting on camera, it was pretty much digital?
I did a short film in Los Angeles probably 13 years ago where we did use film.
Okay, so you just got into the industry right as that was happening.
Yeah,
really.
I missed the celluloid era, the film
area.
I missed that area.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that's changed.
Did you ever see that documentary? I think it's called Side by Side. It was directed by Keanu Reeves, of all people. I don't know what impression that might give somebody, but it was actually... It's kind of like the authoritative documentary that kind of explains, the process of going... And also all the holdouts. I mean, again, this is probably a few years old. And not that old, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So certainly when we're already... definitely moved into digital. But holdouts, like famously, I think Christopher Nolan is one... I'm not sure. I think Scorsese might have finally gone over to digital. But there's certain holdouts who are really passionate about holding
the
on.
The art of it, right?
Yeah.
The art of
filmmaking. What do you think about that? Well, I remember that was like a big conversation at 15, 20 years ago. Like, because in 99, Phantom Menace came out, the prequels for Star Wars. I think that was the first time really that a major motion picture was full-on committed to digital.
Was that the year? 99 was the first year?
Yeah, and there might have been other films that were shot digitally, but that was certainly one of the big landmark, big-shot movies where George Lucas was self-determined because of his abundant wealth and his ownership of the material. He could make that choice, I think, singularly, without getting approval from the studios. Huh. And I think there might have, I guess they needed to have digital projectors at the theaters.
And wasn't it panned because of how slick it looked or the different
the film film?
Yeah.
I mean, that add it to the list of reasons maybe why it was panned, but people didn't like it. But I think generally speaking, people were very uncomfortable with how it looked. And that's kind of where I'm leading. And, and that's what at the time, that was my thought was, how does this work? Like, that's all I'd ever known was film. Mm-hmm. And, my experience of video is like certain TV shows or just really crass, like amateurish experiences with digital cameras. But my thought is... Is it truly not as good, or is it just that you have this romantic association with what you know and people inherently don't like change? So that frame rate or whatever, which it feels like, well, that's what it should always be. Mm-hmm. It's like, is that
traditionalist, as you're talking
about? Is that reasonable? Objectively, is it inherently better, or is it simply just people holding on to what they know and have romantic notions about it because they fell in love with movies through seeing movies in that way?
I think it's the latter. What you just said is that people had a love affair with the idea of film.
That's when they felt their formative years of enjoying movies leading them to becoming a filmmaker.
Like Ghostbusters and all the good things of our age. Well, I might be a bit older than you. I don't know, but
I'm 23 years old.
Yeah, I'm 28.
So Ghostbusters, I saw it. I saw it with all the girls in it, right?
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, the female.
I love that movie. All female cast. Yeah,
but I guarantee you that was digital. Right? That was a digital project. People say that film looks different as opposed to digital.
But now when
but
I go to the
theater...
there's
so many filters, you can't tell.
It's all pretty much all digital, right?
Yeah, pretty much everything is digital. I would say 90-something percent.
So they make it filmic by having a frame rate that matches
frame
that
rate
of film?
And sometimes a filter or color correction on it.
So they do... take whatever it is.
Oh, they try and keep it. Oh, yeah, that's the idea.
And try to seamlessly maintain it to what it was.
How can we use digital and make it look filmic?
Okay, so I guess that would be the question. Okay, I'm getting really excited about this, so much so that I'm trying to choose my words very carefully. Movies coming out now, are they made to look the way they do because that's the best they can be in terms of how they look, or because they're trying to approximate this thing that people are nostalgic for? I guess that's what I'm curious about.
I can't speak for every movie that comes out or director's ideas or DOPs, but I would say they generally like to keep it
that aesthetic
of film. Of, I don't know whether it's the graininess. I know you'll never get like a grainy.
It's this. I guess the frame rate is about the surreal quality of it dropping frames, like it's something that's 29 or 30 frames or more, like your iPhone video.
Yeah.
Looks more like Jay's with me here in the studio,
yeah,
as opposed to that scene in that movie, because when there's less frames,
shadows and light and less frames. Also about the colors that are absorbed on digital versus what the color spectrum on film as well. It's different. Hmm. It's a different absorption into the cellular. But I've come of age in the era of digital filmmaking. So it's hard for me to say, oh, I want it to look like film. It's opened up the doors to a lot of independent film. So much
experimentation.
More. It's not just those who have, it's those who want to have or are minimal.
It's more democratic.
Yeah, it's more democratic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less of a monopoly, less studio driven.
Yeah.
And now it's like you see these independent pictures that can knock the socks off at the box office
And kind of related to that, actually, but kind of taking a left turn here, it seems to me that what's happening in terms of major motion pictures at the theater, like we grew up, when you see a movie, that's how you get to see a new movie. Mm-hmm. It seems like in order for it to be viable in terms of big profit, they've got to be big action superhero movies.
Yeah.
And
comic book
in terms of stories that want to be told with more modest budgets and the prospect of profit, like significant profit, is marginal. That's now more like a Netflix streaming thing. Is that the direction?
Yeah, the content. Yeah,
it's moving. Where that's the good news is that, okay, if you want to make a movie, again, coming back to that romantic notion, when we grew up, if we fell in love with movies and now you want to be a director that makes a movie and everybody sees it, well, we grew up and everybody would go to the theater. So is it okay if now the reality is you make a smaller movie and it just immediately goes on Netflix?
Straight streaming, yeah.
And everybody has access to it on their phone and at home. Mm-hmm. It'll never be in a movie theater for a run, but that's okay because at least people get to see it? Or do you think it's sad that those kinds of movies can't have a theatrical run?
I like it because it is causing the old model to be destroyed. The old model that was a monopoly that made very small percentage of people extremely rich and extremely controlling of the product, right?
Right.
So I hear you. Maybe you won't see these shows in the theater, but you might once that old system crumbles and it is. The big studios, the Warner Brothers, the NBCs, they're all taking Amazon and Netflix Prime and Hulu and all these models of straight streaming into their future planning, and it's changing the idea of pilot season, which is January to March of this, that's their breeding ground. Now it's year round, and it's there's a huge kind of revolution going on because of the streaming. So I think it's a good thing.
It's happening fast too, really fast.
But like, you might not see in the theaters. You'll see it at your home. You'll see it on your phone.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe 10 years from now, when that whole model shifted, you will see streaming in the theaters. What if you go to a theater and you can choose the show or something? Or I don't know how that would work. Or you know,
be an interesting exercise in consensus building amongst a bunch of people in
press
the audience.
Press A, B, C, or
Vote.
D. Yeah, there's Vote. A choice of four shows you could watch right now, and the majority watches that show.
And the rest of you just have to sit there
and watch
disappointed.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah.
Six.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Six. Just cut straight to six. Skip right past 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder what the future is of the cinema. You know, it seems like it's holding up. They've modified it to make more money by kind of upcharging the experience. And as I say, making it about giant superhero movies where it's like, you got to go and have the AVX D seat. like super
shaking
experience.
Seats, smell Hulk's armpits.
Yeah. So is that the future of going to see a movie in the theater? Is some sort of intense experience where all of your senses are exploding? Whereas in the past, it was just where you would go to see, like, you know, like a movie about the Holocaust or something, or like a romantic comedy or something that's not necessarily about explosions.
Yeah.
And is that what's going to happen to the cinema? And is that okay?
It has to one up the home experience, right? It has to get them out of the sedentary pattern of just
because
being
for
there.
Me, when I mean, maybe I'm just a little bit of a like a misanthropic individual or something, but when I think about going to the theater, what I'm thinking about is how they overcharge for everything, especially the food. Just the experience of like people, you know, like being on their phone, or like I'm going to be annoyed if other people are not behaving the way I expect them to. There's a lot of challenges to just the movie, which is why I'm ultimately there,
the focus,
that I don't have when I control the environment.
I know.
So for me, I'm not personally, I'm not really compelled by how amazing the sound is or something, because I feel like I have to line up, like I have to do all these things I don't have to do at home. And it just makes me wonder if other people feel the same way. But
You're talking to someone who doesn't go to the movies very often.
Yeah, like how often do you go to the movies? I guess that would be a question.
Like
once a year?
More than that.
But not much more than that. I can tell by the way you're glaring at me.
I also have children too and a very busy life. So the amount of movies I've gone to has definitely
But it used lowered. To be the case that kids would want to go to the
movies.
Though.
Yeah.
Now that would be scared. The reason you'd
now
go.
My daughter's terrified because of the sound systems in this
theater. It's too intense.
And it's What was it?
Plus
Paddington
the advertisements, too. I didn't even gripe about that's the worst part is the advertisements.
And you're not controlling what they're seeing before the show. And, you know.
It's actually, I find the advertisement, maybe this is overstating the case, but I find the experience of being, to me, it's like Clockwork Orange when they've got the eyes, you know, open, they're putting the eye drops in. Like you're being subjected to these commercials that I find very insulting to the intelligence. So if I had kids, I wouldn't want to expose them to half an hour of these car and cell phone commercials and being told what to buy. It just seems so, Jay, it seems gauche. And I don't use that word every day, but I find it to be a little bit gauche.
Very much. And you can't control it unless you literally cover their eyes and plug their ears.
Yes.
And be like, we're here to watch Paddington 2, but now you're being forced to see Virgin Mobile ads. Or
instead of using the eye drops that lubricate the eyes and allow you to keep them open, some sort of solution that makes them sting.
Hey.
You wouldn't want to do that to your kids,
no.
though. Jay, we're burning through the time. And
what time is it?
It's 6:42.
Oh, my word.
Gareth is here. He's popped in. And
I know him from shows that I've done.
He works in the industry.
He was the first AD on a couple of shows
That's
that I
true.
Did.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. He does work in the
he probably
industry.
Probably doesn't remember me.
And even as we were talking about this, and I know that he might be overhearing the conversation, we're talking about things that Gareth would have lots of opinions and ideas about, for sure.
Yeah.
Gareth was a guest on the show once.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
There it is.
So are you feeling like we should talk about other things and then in our last 8 minutes?
We can do whatever we want, but what I need to emphasize to the listener is it's 604 UBC CITR, and there's still an opportunity to get some talk time.
Where's our friend who had all the dialects last time? Remember him?
Yeah.
I know that he called
what
five
was
or
his
six
name?
Times. Steven?
Steven.
Was it Steven?
Steven, yeah.
Or Stefan.
You know, there's a lot I could say about him, but what I will say is this. He's a great kisser. He really is.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you guys have met up after?
We did. Tremendous. Immediately after the show. Remember how I told you I had to get going because I had that thing?
Yeah.
And it seemed kind of evasive, and I think we had said we were going to hang out afterwards, and you really weren't understanding why I seemed so flustered. It's because I was intrigued to meet the man, and he did not disappoint.
And I was wondering why that janitor kept looking in here. That was Steven.
That was Steven.
that was Steven on his headset.
He got one look at us, and he thought, I'm in. He was an interesting presence. Tonight, we haven't had our equivalent of Steven.
No.
Of course, Steven, he's a sailor, and he sailed away, so he's probably not listening to the show tonight.
It's Fleet Week down
Fleet
south.
Week?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fleet Week, right.
Fleet Week, yeah.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
Not Fleetwood Mac.
San Diego! I don't know. I'm not sure what that means.
I just know
there's a lot of boats
down
there. There's a lot of boats and the Navy.
Sure.
604 UBC CITR, this is your opportunity to get some talk time with the man, Jay Hindle.
Hi.
I don't know that you otherwise will get a chance like this, so you might as well seize it. Go ahead and dial 604 and determine the numbers that correspond to UBC CITR. And give us a call. We'll put your ass on the air and we'll have a conversation. It can really be about the things we've discussed, or it could be a complete non sequitur, as long as it's not about our personal lives, because that's a conversation that we save for off the air. We want to create some intrigue. So should we create some distortions about our personal lives or talk about something else?
Wow.
We've got about 10 minutes left. And
it's
really,
like choose your own
I can't
adventure
believe
going
that
on.
I'm sitting here telling you that we're wrapping up the show. I can't believe it was 3 months ago. that you came and did the show for the first time. Thank you for coming down, by the way.
Hey, my pleasure.
You know, it's so much better with you here than without you here. And you should just come and do the show every 2 weeks from now on. Just put your life on hold.
Just a standing invitation.
Yeah. All right. A standing invitation, but one that you honor every 2 weeks and that you're always here. And whatever else could be happening on your life biweekly on a Sunday evening is set aside for the likes of this. Basically an experience of two men sitting here saying, what do we want to do with the time we have left? And there's so much we could do. We could improvise. We could read a monologue. I could encourage you to memorize some of the text that I see on some signs over there.
Have you ever talked to your listeners about the fact that you, in fact, are a movie maker or were back in the day of Der Kofferstelle?
Maybe did we not discuss that last time?
I don't remember.
I'm proud of us for not having discussed it last time because I'm so nostalgic about that.
Do you bring it up a lot on the air?
You and I always have brought it up with each other historically.
Well, it was a formative period
when we've
seen
each other for little moments here and there. Yeah. But I think because we didn't talk about it last time, now we're allowed to do just that. Well, is that how we met? It's not how we met. It was around the time we met. We met doing some theater at the university, and then I was making a short film.
Yeah.
And
now, were you shooting that on digital or film?
Mm-hmm. Digital.
Yeah.
One chip camera.
The early days of digital.
I think it was a one chip consumer camera.
Wow.
And to my credit, I realized how horrible that would look, so I made sure that I found a premise that would service.
Yeah.
How not good it would look.
Mockumentary.
Yeah. And it was a mockumentary about a German expressionist film. And so therefore I could do some black and white.
Now, I don't think I've ever asked you, was any part of that scripted or was it full improv?
I think it was pretty much full improv. Oh, I'm trying to remember.
I know
right
my
now.
Part was.
But that's, well, exactly, because in your case, we were feeling like we needed another character to connect a couple of things with the other characters.
I was kind of the foil. I was
that's
a foil.
That's right. Yeah,
Klaus,
there was two characters, and there was a lot of sort
Hans?
Of...
No.
Their relationship was a bit ambiguous and unclear, and we needed somebody else to shed a bit more light on that. And you were doing a theater production at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, if Jay's here, we can just quickly get him to do this thing.
Yeah.
And you were... You know, game for it immediately. And then I just kind of explained like what your name was, what you needed to kind of get
to. I was pre-show. I was doing my pre-show warm-ups for Shakespeare, Victoria Shakespeare
Festival. That's right. And you had like 5 minutes or something like, okay, well, this is who you are. This is what you need to get to. And could you just figure it out? And you're like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
And you were the one take wonder.
I remember a line from shooting star
to falling rain. Yes, that was a nice moment.
Captured forever on one chip digital.
Maybe we should do either, should we do a
screening?
Sequel?
Oh.
Should we start with a screening?
Yeah.
And then depending on that, how that goes, consider, I was going to ask, should it be a sequel or a reimagining? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or what are the other options? Prequel?
Well, anything. You could do a...
DKS6.
A graphic novel.
Graphic novel.
Yeah.
So don't even make films. Just move to a different medium altogether.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we should do is we should do a three-chip version. Like find a consumer... A prosumer three-chip camera from like 2003.
Upgrade.
And upgrade it. And we'll actually set it in 2003. Maybe even try to shoot it as if we did it in 2003 and it's like the lost DKS2.
Yes. With Billy Reed,
informing
the kids' minds of the world.
But we need to know where he was in 2003.
It's true.
We can't be thinking about where he's at now
because
that's irrelevant.
No,
I don't think, so if it's 2003, I don't think he's branded as Billy Reed.
No.
No, he's just Bill Reed.
Reed.
Yeah.
He dropped the Y back then.
There had never been a Y.
Oh, yeah.
It was before he put it on there. It
helped to make him accessible.
It's interesting when people brand themselves that way because if you know that person personally and then they brand themselves and then you see somebody who's come to know them as that brand and they call them by that name, you know that's not their name. Like that's not their name.
That happened to me with my father.
How so?
Well, I grew up with him. His name is Morris.
M-A-U-R-I-C-E. And people called him that?
Yes, people called him that for years, decades. And suddenly I went home.
Maury?
It's Maurice.
Oh.
So it's a slight change, but I remember.
He decided to change that?
Yeah.
What was behind the decision?
I don't know. He's never told me.
He never talked about it?
I think it was an alpha male thing. I don't know.
Hold on. Alpha male to become Maurice? I think that's
I know.
A little bit backwards, isn't
Maybe
it?
Maybe it made him seem a little more exotic or interesting or... I don't know. But
so you just went home for Christmas one year?
Basically.
And you heard people. So did he tell you or you heard people calling him?
I heard people.
Like
I knew.
Your mom? Or what did they call him?
Yeah, my
everybody changed it.
Stepmom was like, Maurice, come for dinner. And I looked at him and I said, pardon me, Dad, what's your name? And he said, my name's Maurice. And I pretty much fell down the stairs in a, what is that called? Just cognitive dissonant way. Like, what? It's like when my dad shaved his mustache. All of a sudden, he's this different.
Like a baby who's only ever known their father with a beard. And suddenly shaved it.
I was between tears and laughter of like, wow. No, but he didn't discuss it with you.
You just kind of accepted it.
Not really.
Boy, I guess you call him dad though, right?
Yeah.
So for you, you didn't have to make the adjustment.
Yeah.
So when you would hear people call him that, you'd think.
I would just look like,
that's
who
not
you?
His name.
Yeah. Who are you speaking
that's
to?
Not who he is.
Or who is your idea of my dad now that it's Maurice versus Morris?
That's what it was like for me with Bill. When people would call him Billy, I'm like, mm-hmm. Come on, that's not who
I knew him when. I knew him back in the day.
I knew him when. You guys.
I knew him when he was Willie.
Willie.
He went through a whole thing to get there.
Hey, I was just going to do a gratuitous plug. If
Please.
You guys are around this summer, I'm in Mamma Mia.
Oh, cool. That's right. Yeah. So that must be starting soon, eh?
April 17th. Is the start of rehearsal.
Oh, right, yeah.
May 10th is the first show.
I've seen the signs on the bus.
I've seen the signs on the bus, too. And I
forgot that you were in that. Yeah. Did we talk about that last time?
Probably.
We probably did. I forgot you were in that. Because
but if you guys like musicals and fun high kicks.
Who doesn't?
Come out and.
Everybody likes that.
Come play with Mamma Mia.
My friend Craig Way, his partner Stephanie is in that.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in that.
Huh. I look forward to meeting Stephanie.
You will become acquainted.
I don't know her. Yeah.
Yes.
But you should come too.
To the show?
Yeah.
To rehearsals?
To rehearsals, whatever you want.
I'll come to rehearsals.
Okay.
I guess you need to be in the union though, right? I don't think I've paid my union dues in a while. They're pretty strict about that kind of thing though, aren't they?
I could get you in the room. Oh, yeah. I'd have to get everyone's permission.
Yeah. I'd have to assume a false identity, I think, to pull that
off. They'd have to interview your friends. They'd have to find out who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Gee, I can't believe we're out of time. Is there anything else that needs to be? So that was a good plug.
Thank you.
That's running May and June into July, probably.
Yeah, May 10th is
at the Stanley Theater.
At the Stanley Theater, Granville and 12th.
Look at 12th. You. You're going to be in the neighborhood. Remember, last time you did a show there, was it Spamalot?
No, my last show was this past year called The Audience.
Oh, maybe you told me that too.
And I played Tony Blair and David Cameron.
All this stuff that I've just sort of painted out of our last interaction.
Yeah.
Maybe I just didn't realize at the time it was at the Stanley Theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's my stomping grounds. So this is contributing to my belief that maybe I will.
Come on out and listen to some ABBA.
Come and see the show. Yeah, it's an ABBA show, isn't
it's
it?
An ABBA
wow.
show.
Wow.
I look at it as music therapy kind of, but you know.
Music therapy.
That and dogs.
Wow. And we talked about last time how you historically haven't done a lot of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a first?
No.
No.
But Mamma Mia will be a first. I've done music. Spamalot was a musical.
That's right.
I did The Music Man as a musical, but there's been decades in between. So.
Right. Just to remind you, Jay, this is not a paid gig.
Yeah.
And so any like blank spots for me in terms of research or even memorizing previous conversations is totally acceptable.
I won't hold you again.
No.
I won't hold it against you.
Don't have expectations that are unreasonable.
No.
Jay, thank you so much for coming in. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks as per our verbal contract.
It's done. Witnesses.
Okay.
Stephen witnessed. Witnessed by Stephen.
And Gareth as well.
Oh, it's Gareth? Nice.
He's here. Thanks, man.